Good morning, everyone. So very good to see your bright, smiling faces. Now, last week, I was up here, and the PowerPoint looked like that. You are not prohibited from raising your hand and saying, Givens, you need to get to the full screen view. Right there. Yeah, I know it. I'm giving you permission. We have been exploring out of Joshua chapter 1. We're on the east side of the Jordan, and we've been exploring this idea of the Lord going into the land with us. We've been exploring the idea of living our glory land days right now. Because the Lord, our Yeshua, Jesus, is our conqueror and is our victor. And today we'll be focusing more on the concept of what it means for God to be with us. And specifically, the Lord will fight for you. And that's what we'll start out with, is I will be with you, is what we're going to explore this morning using Joshua, if you have your Bibles or your digital Bibles, Joshua chapter 1, in verse 3. Every place on which the sole of your foot treads, I will be with, I have given it to you, just as I spoke to Moses. So every place you put your feet when you go into Canaan, I have given it to you. We'll read verse 5 in a moment. Like right now, we're going to drop down there. No man will be able to stand before you. I'm in Joshua 1, 5. All the days of your life, God is speaking with Joshua. Just as I have been with Moses, I will be with you. I will not fail you or forsake you. Folks, we've been talking about securing real joy and experiencing the victorious Christian living and understanding the power of God and the power of God's presence is very crucial. And I want to use a story, an important story, to illustrate this. There was a young man named Nadine Khoury, Khoury, 13 years old at the time that this story takes place, 5'2" and 100 pounds. That's probably soaking wet. His teenage attackers were larger and older and ran in a pack of 7. And on a cold January in 2011, for 30 minutes, these bullies hit him, beat, kicked, dragged him through the snow. And I saw a video clip of this. One point, pushed him, shoved him into a small tree. It was wintertime, so it had no leaves on it. Just stuck him up there. That didn't work too very well, so they hung him on an iron fence, an iron rail fence. Now, his mom had recently moved to Philadelphia. She had been a hotel maid but had lost her job and was looking for work. Back in 2000, his mom had escaped from war-torn Liberia, and so here's her son, who's a new kid on the block in a tough neighborhood. And here's a mom, who's an unemployed immigrant with a funny accent. So this kid, Nadine, was ripe for picking on by a wolf pack. And they did. These young thugs had been hazing and picking on Nadine for some time, but this incident in 2011 could have killed him. One of his attackers, and this is the irony part, isn't it? This is where pride comes in. You can see pride and arrogance come in. One of his attackers filmed the attack on a cell phone and posted it. That's how I was able to see some of the scenes in there. It went viral. Neighbors saw it and got angry. The police saw it and got involved. And it's a good story. The boys were convicted and jailed, as far as I know. The show called The View invited Nadine and his mother onto their stage in front of the cameras, and he appeared brave. Nadine did. At one time he said, "It may happen again, and they may pick on someone smaller than me." He was kind of expressing his concern and fear, not just for himself, but for others. What he didn't know, and his mother didn't know, is that The View had arranged for this fella here, DeSean Jackson, a wide receiver for the Philadelphia Eagles, and two offensive linemen to come out onto the stage. And they surprised them, and he welled up with tears, and DeSean sat down next to him, and he gave him a jersey right there in front of the cameras. And I didn't see this, but evidently he gave him his phone number. He said, "Put this in your phone. You can call me anytime you need me." Now isn't that an amazing offer? Now, who would turn down having an NFL player on their speed dial with two offensive linemen? Who wouldn't like that type of protection? That's a pretty amazing offer, and it empowered a young, I think it would empower a young man like that, a frightened, intimidated youngster, to go out and face a hostile environment. Now think about you and I in our lives when we face what we call trials and hardships and trauma due to a fallen world that we live in, sin all around us. Do we have God at our fingertips? We sure do. Do we have God on speed dial, if you could put it that way? Absolutely. Which brings us to Joshua 1, verse 5. This is God's promise here. "No man will be able to stand before you all the days of your life. Just as I have been with Moses, I will be with you. I will not fail you or forsake you." Have you done this before when you face difficult circumstances? Have you ever personalized this verse or ones like it? We could replace "I" with "my God" and "you" with "me." My God is with me. He will not fail me or forsake me. It's that last phrase right there. Let's say this together, all right? Let's all say this together and put us in there. Put "my God" and "me" in there. The last phrase, ready? "My God will be with me. My God will not forsake me, fail me, or forsake me." We can all say it together if I get it right. Let's try it again. "My God will be with me. My God will not fail me or forsake me." That was pretty good participation. That's what I've been trying to do in this series, is to get you involved in it. I'm not going to do that every lesson, but get you involved more than just repeating a verse, but try to comprehend this idea of God being with you. Can we do that? Will you allow God to fight your spiritual battles? Now, God's basically saying to Joshua here, you've heard that when we get over that river, Jordan, and we face cities, there's going to be some cities that have big, thick, tall walls, and they're strong. You know what? That's true. But I'm stronger. I'm pointing as if I'm speaking for God here. God is speaking. You've heard that those Canaanites have the home field advantage, because they know the layout of the land, how to get around the valleys and the ravines and everything. You know what? That's true. But with me on your side, you have the advantage. You've heard that they have chariots and you have none. That's true. But with me on your side, we can conquer them. Right? That's what God is saying to Joshua here. Will you allow God to fight your spiritual battles? Can you hear God saying to you, "I will not fail you or forsake you"? He doesn't give us chariots, does he? He gives us whom? Who's our Joshua? Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ tilts the scale. We have the same promise in the New Testament. We've touched on Hebrews 13, 5 through 6 before. For God has said, I will never leave you or forsake you. This is sounding very familiar, isn't it? So we can say with confidence, the Lord is my helper. I will not be afraid. What can anyone do to me? I will not be afraid. What can any... Let's look at that phrase. Let's highlight this phrase right there. What can anyone do to me? If you just pluck that out and look at that, what can man do to me or anyone do to me? What's the answer to that? A lot. Just ask Nadine. Just think about all the media coverage we've had in the past 10, 20, 30 years of young women, for example, college-age women who disappear. And sometimes they're found alive. You know, the recent one is, one of the recent ones is in South Carolina, that woman in a cargo container, chained to a cargo container, and her boyfriend had been murdered. And how many more stories throughout America do we read? What can man do to us? A lot. The context here, though, is, well, let's put it in your shoes. Have you had people deceive you before or slander you? Or lie about you, or lie to you, or assault you verbally, or maybe assault you physically. The context here is, what can man do, or what can anyone do to you with God at your side? That's the question we need to be asking. The word helper here, it's from a Greek word, two Greek words. One means to shout, and the other means to run. To shout and run, but it's God speaking. It's God shouting out and running to you, I'm coming. It'd be like a 3 or 4 year old rolling down some stairs. And what happens when that 3 or 4 year old hits the bottom of the stairs? What do you hear? Wah! And mama says, I'm coming. And does she stay in the kitchen? She runs and shouts, I'm coming. That's the picture here. The Lord shouting and running to us to help. Reminds me of Psalm 41:6. The Lord is an ever-present help in what times? Times of danger, times of trouble. Are you aware of God's presence? There's a statement in Nehemiah. His favorable hand is upon you. If your faith is obedient and your faith is active, which it should be, otherwise it's a dead faith, it changes everything because of whom you trust. Right? Faith is the idea of trusting in someone. Who do you trust, people? Our Joshua, our God. God is strong, I can be strong. God is able, I am able. God has access to all the treasures of wisdom, you can have access to that. What does James say you need to do? All you need to do is ask, James 1. And it gets better. God not only comforts and calms and knows you, but when you have faith, He is with you and He fights for you. This is the greatest news right here. This is the explanation of the victory. If we jump, and I've done this several times in this series, jump towards the end of the book, Joshua 23. I'm going to read it from the New American Standard. This is at the end of Joshua's life, and he reminds the people, quote, "You have seen all that the Lord your God has done to all these nations because of you." They were involved. They had to do something. What was it? Put their feet on the land. Get in there and fight. But here's what Joshua says. For the Lord your God is He who has been fighting for you. Wow. Reminds me of Proverbs 21:31. The horse is prepared for the day of battle. But, brethren, where does the victory belong? Where? The victory belongs to the Lord. Proverbs 21:31. Proverbs 21:31. Notice the recurring theme in Joshua over and over again. In Joshua 1:2, before they cross the Jordan, Joshua says to the people, "Rise, go over this Jordan, you and all the people," this is God talking, excuse me, "to the land which I am giving them." We spent a long time on that. When they stick their toes in the Jordan River and it's about to part, Joshua says to them, "The Lord will do wonders among you." Joshua 3:5. And in 4:23, after they cross the Jordan River, they set up those stones as a monument. Remember that? "The Lord your God," Joshua said, "he's the one that dried up the waters of the Jordan." And then when they're standing around the walls of Jericho on the seventh day, after they march around seven times, Joshua says, "Shout, for the Lord has given you the city." That's 6:16. Notice that recording, that recurring theme, the Lord is fighting for his people here in Joshua. Notice this summary. "One of you," this is from Joshua 23, verses 9 and 10. "One man of you shall chase 1,000, for the Lord your God is he that fights for you, as he promised you." Joshua 23, 9 and 10. That's a good memory verse, isn't it? Notice the prior promises. We've got some prior promises. If we go back down the timeline to Leviticus, the 26th chapter, verses 6 to 13. Who's my reader on that one? Yeah, that's what Preston read. Thank you. It's already done. So we want to highlight this right here. 5 of you will chase 100, and 100 of you will chase 10,000. There's verses 6 to 13. There's a lot of verses. That's why I had them read it ahead of time. "Your enemies will fall by the sword before you." This is in Leviticus 26, and he's telling the people, when you get into the land, "I'm going to look on you with favor, and you'll be fruitful, and I'll increase your numbers, and I'll keep my covenant." This is the Lord talking. "You'll be eating last year's harvest, and you'll have to move it out to make room for the new." All these wonderful blessings. Here's the key. "I will put my dwelling place among you." Remember how we've been emphasizing the presence of the Lord? The presence of the Lord. What are the four P's? Presence, promise, power, and possession. The presence of the Lord. "I will be with my people." There were conditions, and that was their faith. "I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt. But I will fight for you." Deuteronomy 32:30. "How can one chase 1,000 and two people put 10,000 to flight?" How does that happen? How can one person run off 1,000 enemy? Or two run off 10,000? How does that happen? Is it all by themselves? Is it all their own power, their own strength, their own knowledge, their own wisdom, their own cunning, their own military scheming? No, it's unless the Lord had given them up, them, the enemy. It's the Lord giving the enemy up. It's the Lord working for them. Wow, wow, wow. It's not due to your military genius, Israel. In Joshua, we find astonishing victory and we find astonishing glory. And it's the foreshadowing of living by faith in Jesus Christ. Think of Ephesians 6, when there's that description of putting on the armor of God. Do you all remember that? And fighting the forces of darkness. Where's your armor, folks? Where's your spiritual armor? Is it resting somewhere, or do we have it on? The battle is Jehovah's. We put our armor on and we fight, but the battle is Jehovah's. Okay, so we understand that when it comes to Israel. God fights for Israel. Well, what does it mean for you and me? What does it mean? I actually want to go back to here. What does it really mean? Well, ask yourselves
the question, the Canaanites of your life, the Amorites of your life,
what do they look like? Again, we've been sitting in Joshua. We've been reading about how they're going to take the land. The Israelites take the land. But what does this mean? God fights for you. What does that mean? Think about the Canaanites of your life. What are they? Fear, dread, bitterness, hate, holding grudges, gossip, anger, revenge, laziness, addictions, selfishness. You know what the tough one about selfishness is? Selfishness doesn't allow you to see yourself when you're the problem. Or here's a Canaanite. I've always believed it this way. Why do I need to change anything? I've always believed it this way, so it must be right. That's quite an enemy, isn't it? What demons do you struggle with? As children, or adults in the past, maybe you've run from these demons, from these Canaanites. Maybe you've been overwhelmed. Now, using Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Stand up and face it. What does he tell Joshua here and the people? Be strong and courageous. Get out of here, regrets. Get out of here, shame. Get out of here, grief. Get out of here, guilt. Get out of here, fear of death. Get out of here, doubt. Be strong and courageous. Maybe you've been surrounded by wilderness talkers. And we've been talking about that a lot, haven't we? Wilderness talkers, those who live an immature, defeated Christian life. Don't allow yourselves to be surrounded by them and influence them. Do the opposite. Influence them. Be strong and courageous. Follow James 4:7. I love this one. Submit to God, resist the devil, and what will he do? He will what? Flee. He that is in you is greater than he that is in the world. Amen, brethren? That is an awesome passage, James 4:7. And I realize you here in Mount Vernon that meet with this church here might be getting, probably are, sick of me encouraging you to seek and engage seekers in your circle of influence. I do that a lot at what we call announcements time. And so I'll shut up about that if I can see and witness you, mainly as a group, not just the one or two individuals, trusting in God's presence and in His power and in His promises till it exudes out of your spiritual pores, so to speak. And then you can't shut up. When you get to the point where you can't shut up, then I'll shut up on that encouragement part. Can you crush the dark forces? It's a Star Wars reference, right, Austin? And appeal to God to be your helper. You can experience fresh transformation and renewal, beloved. Because why? God fights for you. He not only fights for you, He blazes the trail. He protects you from threats and He defends you. This is really important, everybody. If you haven't been hearing a thing I said, please latch on to this because I'm going to be speaking metaphorically. Metaphorically. Figure of speech. The Lord your God. Now, in your lifetime as a child of God, He collapses walls, brethren. He slays giants. He stills the sun. Read about that in Joshua. He rains hail on Satan. He marches in the treetops, metaphorically speaking. And that's outside of Joshua. That's in Samuel. He defeats the many with the few. He empties tombs. He stills the mouths of lions. He cools the furnace, metaphorically speaking. Because you worship and follow the same God who exercised His power back in the Old Testament. And those stories, which you think, they have no connection with me. That just shows a lot of people were faithful. Well, are you faithful? And do you trust in that same God who exercises that same power in your life? It's the same source. That's what we're getting at. Did you know that God is fighting for you? Who's my Moses? Who's my Exodus 14? 14. Here we've got Moses. Now we're backing up on the timeline as they're coming out of Egypt, right? And they're backed up against the Red Sea. They're facing the Red Sea. The Egyptian army's coming to them, and they cry out to Moses, "What'd you do? Bring us out here, out of Egypt, to kill us? We want to go back there and serve them." And what does Moses say? The Lord will fight for you. You only need to be still. Kind of like parents saying, be quiet and be still and watch me do what I need to do for you. Right? This idea of God fighting for you is not just in Joshua. There we see it in Exodus. And you for sure see it in 1 Samuel 17, don't you, with David facing Goliath. Let's read that. This is David. Who's David talking to here? The Goliath. I'm not putting Daniel on the spot. I'm putting you on the spot. He's talking to the Goliath. This is his enemy.
This very day I will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds and the wild animals. The whole world will know that there is a God in Israel.
That's right.
All those gathered here will know that it is not by the sword or spear that the Lord saves, but the battle is the Lord, and he will give all of you to the Lord.
Okay, speaking to his enemies. The battle is the Lord. He will give all of you into our hands. Did David have confidence? Yeah. We read this story. We study this story. We preach about this story. We talk about this story. But do you apply it to yourself in believing in the power of God and the presence of God and the strength of God? The battle is the Lord's. That's why David said in Psalm 35:1, I'll go ahead and read it, Daniel. Contend with the Lord. Contend, Lord, with those who contend with me. That's what he's asking the Lord to do. Contend with those who contend with me. Fight against those who fight against me. Have you ever prayed that to the Lord? Lord, please fight against those who fight for me. What's our other example? Hezekiah. So we're going back up the timeline after Joshua a little ways. Hezekiah is one of the kings. He's being surrounded by the Assyrian army. We find out later it's at least 185,000 soldiers surrounding Jerusalem. What is he going to do? Hezekiah prays about it. And 2 Chronicles 32:8, Kyle.
With him is only the arm of flesh.
That's talking about Assyria. That's the arm of flesh. That's a fleshly army. Go ahead.
So with us is the Lord our God to help us and to fight our battles. And the people gain confidence from what Hezekiah, the king of Judah,
said. Well, he may have said a lot of things, but boy, highlighting the Bible's highlighting that. The Lord our God is with us to help us and to fight our battles. And where was their confidence level? It went where? Down or up? You tell me, Daniel. Up. That's right. Nehemiah 4:20. Here they're trying to, this is farther down this timeline. Jerusalem has been destroyed. They're trying to rebuild the walls. They're having trouble because their enemies are threatening to attack them. And not just throw spitballs at them, kill them as they're trying to build the wall. So they have a weapon in one hand and they have a tool in the other. And Nehemiah wants to encourage them, and he says in 4:20, Kyle. All right. Wherever you hear the sound of the trumpet, you all go to that point on the wall, rush over there and help fight. But our God is the one fighting for us. See how this theme continues through here? Consider these four words. God fights for you. And it's on your outline on the back. God is representing whom? The only true God. The Almighty. The one who's sovereign. The supreme ruler. The monarch of the universe. The great I Am. And he fights. He's deploying his angels, in my understanding, and powerfully working for you. And that is substantiated in the Bible, even in the New Testament. And we have Hebrews 13 as one of our passages. Four, what's he fighting for? your health, physical and spiritual, your family, your faith, and if need be, your restoration, strengthening your faith, coming back to Him. And He's fighting for you, even if you have a sordid past. That means ugly past, past full of sin. Even if you grew up with an absentee dad, or you had at one time were a lousy husband, or you incurred bad debt, made a lot of mistakes, financial choices, and things like that. The Lord God fights for you, even with all your frailties and problems. If you'll turn how to Him? In, starts with F, faith. Are you a chosen person of faith? You are a chosen person of faith, Ephesians 1. The big news here is in 121, which we'll read in a minute. But the big news of the Bible is not that you fight for God, but that God fights for you. That's the big news. And that's what we see throughout the Old Testament and through these New Testament passages. God is your guardian. This is why I had Randy read Psalm 121, verses 3 through 8. Wasn't that a beautiful psalm? Still is, even since he read it. The Lord watches over you. The Lord is your shade at your right hand. I like verse 3. He will not let your foot slip. He who watches over you will not slumber. Indeed, he who watches over Israel will neither sleep nor slumber. Verse 2, my help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. That's where my help comes from. He's my guardian. He's your guardian. What a blessed thought. How does this all work out in the final victory? What's interesting is towards the end of Joshua's life, if I have my timeline correct, in Joshua 12, verses 9 to 23. Are some of you in Joshua? It's kind of interesting. You turn to chapter 12, and verse 7, now these are the kings of the land whom Joshua and the sons of Israel defeated beyond the Jordan toward the rest. You get down to verse 9, and it's kind of weird. It goes, the king of Jericho, 1. The king of Ai, which is beside Bethel, 1. The king of Jerusalem, 1. The king of Hebron, 1. 1, 1, 1. One after one was defeated. And what does it add up to? It adds up to this. Joshua and the people conquered 31 enemies, 31 kings. How many battles did the Canaanites win? Big fat zero. That was the score, if you want to put it in those terms. We're such sports enthusiasts and football lovers and baseball lovers, we often think in terms of score. Well, if you want to do that, there's the score. What's the score with you and Jesus? What will be your score? What will be the score when you die? We know that the score right now should be the same as the score when we die. With Jesus on our side, what's the score? Victory. And you are accounted blameless. How do you put a number on blameless? It's immeasurable, isn't it? Infinite. And what's the score for the forces of darkness? Zero. But you are accounted blameless. Isn't that a beautiful thought, people? In 1 Corinthians 4, verse 5. We're going to close with 1 Corinthians 4, 5. And I know I'm pulling it out of context here, but let me find it. Romans, 1 Corinthians 4, 5. And I had it marked. When you know that. Therefore, do not go on passing judgment before the time, but wait until the Lord comes, who will bring both to light the things hidden in the darkness and disclose the motive of men's heart. And then each man's praise will come to him from God. That's what I want to highlight. Each man's praise will come to him from God. What have been your conquest periods where you've had to defeat some enemies? Where you've called for the Lord for help and you were grappling with things like, what would you say, greed? Have any of you grappled with envy, explosive temper? Have any of you been abused in any sort of way? Tempted with drugs? What have you grappled with? and you called upon the Lord for help, and he helped you. Do you give thanks for God fighting for you? Do you give thanks to God for fighting for you? These are glory days, leading to the ultimate glory days in eternity. God has been fighting for you since the Garden of Eden. Jesus fought for your salvation on the cross. Jesus faced Satan in the wilderness on your behalf. He fought for your peace. He is your guardian. Isn't that a beautiful thought? Is there anyone here this morning who would like to make Jesus their guardian? Jesus will fight for you. Is there anyone still in Egypt? Want to come out of the bondage and the slavery of Egypt? God will fight for you. God is on your side. He will not fail you or forsake you. That invitation is always open. 24/7. Let's stand and sing the song that's been selected.